Blog Talk Radio.
Canto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, November the 21st, and today we're going to be chatting with our good friend Frank Burke, and we're going to be doing our annual Thanksgiving conversation. I think we've done a few of these with Frank over the years, and Frank is also going to be sharing with us something very timely, because it was on actually November 19th, but about this time in 1863 that President Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address, so we'll talk a little bit about that amazing speech and the impact that it had on the country. So let me say hello to our friend Frank Burke, and this time I really got to ask you for the weather report, because I see a lot of snow up there, Frank.
Well, you know, we haven't had, let's put it this way, we're not Buffalo, but we've had a couple of inches. It's been a very gentle snow. And, you know, we haven't had to shovel the walks because they kind of have cleaned off, or they were warm enough. Maybe a couple of inches, but very cold to the extent of like single digits last night, but now getting warmer, and we're expecting around 40 degrees on Thanksgiving.
All right, so that at least will melt the snow, but it's a good excuse for a fireplace, if I can remember from my time up in Wisconsin.
Absolutely, and we've had the fireplace on. We have a gas log, which we're very thankful for, because, you know, when you burn wood, you're constantly bringing in wood, taking out ashes, and dealing with
right. Soot.
And we use the gas log virtually every night. It's better than television.
Well, especially these days, I mean, I would think. I mean, maybe at one time when you could watch I Love Lucy or The Ed Sullivan Show, television was better. But these days, other than sports and some news, I have a hard time really enjoying it. I mean, I find myself actually watching the retro channel, if you can believe that. They have this retro channel of 1960s shows that I remember watching as a kid. And then, of course, the Western Channel. I love this Western movie channel that they have. They go back, and I've gotten to know Audie Murphy quite a bit. I had no idea that he made so many movies, Frank.
No, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, he was, of course, a war veteran, a decorated World War II hero.
And I think the most decorated.
Yeah, he was highly decorated. I don't remember where he ranks, but he's pretty much up there. And then he came back, and I don't know exactly how it worked out, but he made a bunch of Western movies. And there's a bunch of them in the Western Channel, and it's actually quite enjoyable. Well, we're going to be talking today about Thanksgiving. We've done this a few years now in a row, and I always enjoy it. You're a big part of my Thanksgiving thoughts, and tonight you've got a few. But let's look at the country. I mean, there's a lot to be thankful for. What was that, Frank?
I said, and you and your family are a big part of our Thanksgiving, too.
Well, now that we have a few additions, too, you know.
Yes.
known to you as the Mambo Kings. So,
yeah, right.
so now we have a few pictures to send you from time to time. But let's look at the country. I mean, there's a lot to be thankful for. I'm very positive. I always think that there's a lot to be thankful for. Obviously, we're thankful for health and thankful for life and family and all those good things. But there are some issues that I have too, Frank. So let's talk about what we can be thankful for. Well, what do you think?
Well, I think we can be thankful for the fact that we still have a number of people – who believe in this country and believe in the Constitution and the way it was founded. And I'm very, very grateful that even if we didn't have the red wave on Election Day, that we did take over the House. And I hope that the people who are in there will use their power judiciously and help us to restore the country. Because, you know, we have so many people in this country who don't like it and who want to join some kind of one-world government presided over by some elites. The rest of us are just the small people.
Right.
No, and I hear politicians, I hear Chuck Schumer talking about what he calls the Great Reset. And he's a very dangerous man in the position in which he is. So
right.
I'm grateful for those who stood against that and those who still believe in the ideals of the Founding Fathers.
Absolutely, because those ideals are what really matter. I mean, the Founding Fathers, the more I see of where the country is, the more that I value what the Founding Fathers wrote down and passed on to us. So there's a lot of things to feel good about. I agree with you, and obviously family and just the fact that we live in the United States, that's a lot to be grateful for. But you mentioned there wasn't a red wave. Frank, one of the reasons that we didn't have a red wave is because there was this vote by young people, people under 30 years old primarily, college students or recent college students, who decided to vote Democrat because they bought into the idea that the President of the United States could cancel their loan, Frank. And so you have this situation where, you know, the Democrats effectively mobilized these young people. They went into the universities and colleges and basically got them organized to vote because, as you know, young people usually don't vote. College students usually they just don't vote. But this year they did. And that was one of the reasons there was no red wave, is because in many places the young people gave such an overwhelming number of votes to the Democrats. And, I mean, I guess they can vote for whoever they want, Frank, but you really have to wonder about the mentality of people who decide that they're going to vote for a political party because it promises them that the political party is going to cancel their loans. And I'm sitting there saying, you know, what economics class, what constitution class, Frank, did these people learn that? Because, I mean, if anybody had said that to me when I was in college, granted it was a few years ago, I would have said, I don't think he can do that. He may say it, but he can't do it. But yet today, a lot of people thought he could do it. And I even hear now President Biden saying he's going to go to the Supreme Court over this. Well, I think he's going to find a Supreme Court that that isn't going to like the idea of the president canceling loans without going through Congress first, Frank.
Well, you know, I think a good part of this, Silvio, if you look at the lifestyle of younger people, the media that they're exposed to, that they want to expose themselves to, and the recreational things that they employ, like gaming, there's a tremendous amount of fantasy involved. And what is fantasy? It's a suspension of belief. It's the fact that, you know, Luke Skywalker can have a lightsaber, and long ago in a galaxy far away, and you get into this game and you can die six times and be resurrected. You do enough of that stuff and you stop believing in logic. And you know, conceivably, this may have fed into the fact that you believe that a political leader has the power to upend all of commerce, the rules of law, and everything else, and forgive your loans.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling because common sense would have told me, 30 years ago, common sense would have told me when I was in college that he didn't have the authority to do that, and that he couldn't selectively, you know, forgive loans for some people and not others. I mean, if the President of the United States is going to write off loans, well, there's a lot of people with debt that would love to have their loans, you know, written off. But there's another factor to Frank, and that the idea of people who went to college and paid it off, who went to college and worked, and who paid off their loans, and who may be working right now to pay off their loans to attend a community college or whatever. I mean, this is insulting to those people. And that nobody in, you know, nobody at the college, not a single professor stood up and said, guys, he cannot do that. Okay, so come in from the, you know, come in, you know, come back to class, because all you're demonstrating out there cannot change the Constitution this way, Frank.
Well, Silvio, look at some of the other things that are going on. Look at the mayor of San Francisco, who is in the process of authorizing monies to be given to homeless transgender people. Take a look at the amount of money that Biden and the government is promising as reparations for global warming. And I mean, this stuff is all insane. It has no real basis in fact, but these people think that they can do it. And, you know, you can... Or some of the people, you know, the racial people, whether they're indigenous or black, saying, you owe us reparations. Well, you were never a slave, I'm sorry. You were never, you know, dispossessed of your lands. That happened hundreds of years ago. But
right.
There's a belief that somehow they're entitled to it. It's this whole
right.
sense of entitlement.
Right. It's very troubling, because that's how you get young people to vote in huge numbers for a political party that who promises them that. The other thing too, by the way, I was listening to a comedian the other day saying that the British are going to ask the Romans for reparations for what happened 2,000 years ago or 1,500 years ago or whatever it was, you know, when the Roman Empire went in there they weren't exactly the nicest people in the world when they went in and took over this land or that land. But it just troubles me a great deal that there are people who believe this. And it makes you wonder, you know, these young people are, you know, maybe 25, 26 right now. When I was that age, Frank, I was a lot more mature about things like this. When I was that age, I understood that if I put my name on a promissory note, whatever the purpose it was my name that was responsible, not the government to bail me out, Frank.
Yeah, but Silvio, you and I went to school at a time when the educational system was much better. I mean, look at this whole thing about Roe v. Wade. The Democrats have convinced many, many, if not most of these young people that Roe v. Wade outlawed, or that the defeat of Roe v. Wade outlawed any and all abortions. And that's not true. It put it back in the hands of the states. But they're not even bothering to read into it. And that
right.
is a failure of the educational system.
That's right. And I would argue a little bit the media, too, and not pointing out that, for
yes.
example, in California, New York, Illinois, those three come to mind, Washington, Oregon, Colorado, and many of those states, really nothing changed.
Yeah.
When Roe v. Wade was overturned, you know, the day-to-day ability of getting an abortion really did not change. They can still get an abortion in California without any delay. Now, there are some states like Texas and others who have, in fact, put some limitations. But you can still get an abortion. There's still going to be a window to get an abortion. It's going to be limited, but you can still get an abortion. And I think in most cases, rape and incest, you should be able to get an abortion in most places in the United States. But again, there's a lot of things to feel positive about, Frank, but one of the problems, one of the things that really bothers me is that I feel that sometimes, you know, you watch all this division, you watch the way we vote, and you kind of get the feeling that we're like a marriage on the brink of a divorce. I know that sounds awfully pessimistic for Thanksgiving, but how else am I supposed to feel, Frank?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and I think you're right to feel that way. And I think that's why some of the thoughts that Abraham Lincoln expressed in the Gettysburg Address are right on even today, because even if we're not, you know, picking up muskets and firing at each other yet, and I hope we don't, there is a tremendous divide in this country, probably greater than any that we have seen since before the Civil War.
Yeah. And the divide is different and more dangerous, I think, because during the Civil War, they were basically arguing about states' rights and slavery and all of that. But the young man who was fighting for the Confederacy and the young man who was fighting for the Union pretty much had the same values as far as,
yes,
you know, family and family structure, that kind of thing. You know, they were not arguing about some of the things that we are arguing today. For example, Frank, I just saw a story that a young man who came in at number 72 in track and field in some state, I don't remember where, but he came in at number 72 in the men's division, turned around, became a woman, and he came in at number one. So this young man is now number one in the female, you know, track and field in that state or whatever. And some young woman is being denied the opportunity of being number one, not by another young woman, but by a young man who all of a sudden woke up one day and said, well, I'm a girl or I'm a man. That is crazy, Frank. That's the kind of stuff. It's insanity, and that's the kind of thing that drives nations apart. Because, I mean, the views on these issues are so contrasted or so different. You have places like Texas where we've passed laws that says you have to compete in your gender of birth. You can't just become a guy and run with the girls, at least not in competition. But this is the kind of, you know, when I say, you know, we could be, and I don't want to be too pessimistic, but that, you know, we could be in the brink of a divorce, that's what I'm talking about. These are differences that are not, how do you reconcile differences like that, Frank?
Well, you don't, and the tragedy is that all of these differences, you know, one of the unfortunate things about the civil rights movement was the fact that it showed that if you declared yourself a minority, you were able, with enough pressure, to achieve a degree of preference. So all these people who wanted something more declare themselves minorities. The transgender people, the gay people, all these others. And you can't have that many people fighting for that many causes and have a unified country that's capable of standing against its very real enemies.
Right. That's right. And the real enemy, like China, you know, the real enemy we have, China. But of course, you know, there are some similarities with the Civil War, as you pointed out, and the Gettysburg Address. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, you're going to share the Gettysburg Address with us. So let's take a break, and we'll be back with Frank and the Gettysburg Address right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, our annual Thanksgiving chat with our friend Frank Burke, author and businessman and great friend of our show as well. Frank, we were talking about what's good and things to feel good about and things to feel troubled about. I just want to make sure that the audience understand that, you know, we have more things to be happy about than unhappy about, but there are some things in the country that are at the very least very troubling. And I'm sure that when Mr. Lincoln was taking that train to Gettysburg, he probably had thoughts like that in his head, Frank, before he gave that speech. So take it away.
Okay. I think he did. And I think if anything that we have to be grateful for is the fact that we can so openly discuss these problems that we have and lay out our viewpoints without, hopefully, fear of retribution. That, you know, our most precious freedom is freedom of speech. But to talk a little bit about that, when after the Battle of Gettysburg, which was a tremendous battle, so many people killed, 600,000 casualties over the course of the American Civil War, so much larger than any other war in which we fought. Here Abraham Lincoln, who actually may have shared some feeling of guilt about the fact that what are we really fighting for? Why are we tearing each other apart? We don't know. Nobody at that point could have been absolutely certain of one thought or the other having to do with the war, unless they were a fanatic of sorts. But as the historian McKinley Cantor once observed, the Civil War was fought over a verb. The United States is, or the United States are. And Abraham Lincoln firmly believed that the way to phrase it was, the United States is. It is one country. So after the Battle of Gettysburg, after that tremendous cost in human life, he went to dedicate the cemetery at Gettysburg. He was the second orator on the bill. Nobody expected much of him, and indeed, when the speech was given, the reviews were kind of poor. The Republican papers said it was good. The other papers were not positive about it. The chief orator was Edward Everett, who made like a two-hour oration that he's one of the big orators of his day. He made a two-hour oration that people praised highly. But later, after Lincoln had spoken, he wrote him a note and said, "You said more in 2 minutes than I said in 2 hours." And I think that was true. But for what it is, here is the address at the dedication of the cemetery at Gettysburg. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far beyond our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth."
Abraham Lincoln, November, that would have been November 19th, 1863. That was the date of that speech, Frank. And
yes.
I was at Gettysburg. I was at that cemetery back in 2015 or 2016. we went to we were there. Beatrice and I were there, and we walked around, and we saw a little bit of the town. It is really. I think every person interested in American history should go to Gettysburg at some point.
Yes,
you know, whenever it's convenient. Yeah, whenever it's convenient, you know, people should go because it is amazing to walk around and you see the different places with the Union Army or the Confederate Army, whatever, were buried. But the casualty totals, Frank, for that day were, I don't know if they were the worst ever, but they were pretty bad. I mean, what was it, 30, 40,000 soldiers on both sides?
Something like that. The worst day was Fredericksburg in 1862, but Gettysburg was, well, it was the turning point of the war.
Yes,
as many historians observed, Pickett's charge, which was so futile, was the high watermark of the Confederacy.
A couple of things too, Frank, about the speech. You know, at the time that Abraham Lincoln gave that speech, the only people who heard that speech were the ones there. Nobody. Today we're so accustomed to, you know, hearing a president on the radio or television, or going on YouTube, and you know, like I recently watched President Kennedy's speech for the missile crisis, you know, 60 years ago, or the night that he announced. So we're so accustomed to that. You know, we're so accustomed to hearing a farewell address from a president. We're so accustomed to that now that we forget that 159 years ago, the only people who heard that speech were the ones who were there, and given, I don't know what size, the size of the crowd it was, I don't know, but I wonder how many even of the people who were there even heard the speech because of, you know, the volume and whatever, maybe whether it was windy or whatever, it's difficult to listen. So I think that time in history when speeches really were important because that's how you would influence people, we don't really have that anymore because everything now is pre-recorded or, you know, there's a teleprompter. Obviously, Lincoln didn't have a teleprompter. Maybe he had notes. So to me, it's fascinating. To me, it's fascinating how different it used to be, Frank.
Very much so. And Lincoln supposedly had a very kind of a high-pitched voice. So he would not have carried the way that Edward Everett or some of the other orators of the day would have carried.
Yes, I think so. There is a painting of Lincoln giving the address, and some people are sitting right behind him. Now, I don't know if that's a real image or not. Obviously, it's a painting. But he does... Whenever I think of Lincoln giving that address, especially following that two-hour address that the previous person gave, I mean, there must have been a lot of people in the audience who said, come on, get this over quick. Give us a quick speech. We want to go to the bathroom or go home, you know?
Yes, I don't doubt it.
Because there were lots of people there who sat through that long speech before, Frank.
I think you're right. I think you're very right. That's true. It's one of the great speeches in history. I can never read it that I don't get chills.
Yes, I understand. I understand. And what's amazing about it, too, is that at the time, like you indicated, it was not really appreciated. It was not really – I think a lot of people, you know, you were saying many of the newspapers didn't take it very seriously. They thought, well, there goes Lincoln again, you know. A lot of that has to do with Frank, with the fact that he was not that appreciated as a president when he was president, Frank.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. A lot of people hated him.
And even as late as 1864, he didn't think he was going to be reelected. You know, it wasn't until, what was it, Sherman began to have all those victories in the South that many people said, okay, maybe there's an end in sight for this. And that's
right.
How he was reelected. But there was another speech that he gave, Frank, and that was a month before he was killed, and that was the second inaugural address.
Yes.
And I think that one, you know, also went down as one of the greatest beaches ever, Frank.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, yeah, let's get back to the yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that the words from that are inscribed in the Lincoln Memorial.
Right. That's the one I think that, you know, I remember in school, that's the one that the history teacher really liked. So we spoke a lot about it. And, of course, the other reality is that he was killed a month and a half after that speech. That speech would have been on March 4th, 1865, because that's when we used to inaugurate presidents. And, of course, he was killed April 15th, so not much longer after he was assassinated. So it's a good thing to talk about Lincoln. You know, it's a coincidence, of course, because when he gave that speech, Gettysburg speech, we didn't have the formal holiday of Thanksgiving. So, that holiday, of course, came later. And so he gave that speech, and by coincidence, it's within a week of Thanksgiving. And I think that maybe that's more than a coincidence, Frank.
It may well be. It may well be. It's a magnificent piece of literature.
It is. It is written by a man when he was on the train. That's the other part. As I understand, he wrote it by himself. I understand that. I could be wrong. But he wrote that by himself.
Yes. Right. And refined it at the place where he was staying, the home of one of the people who had arranged for the cemetery to be developed as a cemetery.
Yes. Well, we have a few other Thanksgiving thoughts, Frank, and I know you've got a few that you want to share, so let me know. Let us know what they are.
Okay, I will. You know, basically, at Thanksgiving in many families, it's traditional to kind of go around the table and everyone expresses what they are thankful for. And the usual things are like family, friends, a job, hopefully some say the country, the dinner, whatever. But there are many gifts that as Thomas Jefferson would say, they come from the Creator that we don't think about. And they're not so much gifts that we've forgotten about, but gifts that are, if you will, unremembered. And I'm going to briefly talk about three of them today. But they're gifts that we should really be thankful for. The first is memory. Alzheimer's disease is one of the most feared diseases because it's the thief of memory. And without memory, we cannot be who we are. We don't know our families. We don't know our friends. All of that which made us people, our experiences, everything that happened to us is vanished. We're a blank slate and will never be anything more. So memory is precious. When you think about what it is, what a great gift it is to be able to think back, to relive our experiences, both good and bad, to be close to the people we knew who are gone, to understand where we came from and make that where we're going. As we talk tonight, our affection for the founding fathers, all the things we learned, all of that we were given by our teachers and by our readings are all in memory. And this is a tremendous gift that we have this capability. The second, which is a corollary, is imagination. Because imagination is what enables us to plan. You know, Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge. Because knowledge can get us to a point, but we won't know what that point is without imagination. And imagination is the source of creativity. It's the source of our future. What are you going to be doing next year? What are you looking forward to? Where do you want to be? Who do you want to be with? What is precious to you? That's all because of imagination. We have to imagine that before we can do it. So imagination, again, is a tremendous gift. And the third is a tough one. I'm going to call it spirituality. because spirituality is something that in many ways is illogical. You know, it's where love comes from. You know, the great psychiatrist, pioneer psychiatrist, Harry Stack Sullivan, once said, when the welfare of another person is as important to an individual as their own, then a state of love exists. Yet we also hear that self-preservation is the first law of nature. We have to preserve ourselves. But every day we hear about people who have given their lives selflessly for other people, for people they loved, for causes they believed in. And that's not logical according to the way perhaps we tend to think life works. Without spirituality, we'd have no conscience. We all need things and want things, but we restrain ourselves from just running out and grabbing them and stealing them, at least most of us do, because we have that conscience, and that comes from spirituality. And spirituality is what enables us to believe that beyond ourselves, beyond our lives, there is another plane, there's another dimension in which we will be someday. And there we will be reunited with all of those whom we knew, because something spiritual tells us that there's too much in us, too much in life to just cease and desist and not exist any longer. Spirituality tells us that we are indeed a part of God, as is every living thing, every blade of grass, every insect, every animal from time immemorial. And we are there too. So if you think about this, there's a lot to be thankful for.
Absolutely. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say that this Thanksgiving, sometimes we need to think about the unremembered gifts that we have,
yes,
and to be thankful for them.
Right. And you mentioned memory. Yes, I mean, one of the saddest thing is to see people who don't remember because of, they're losing, or, you know, what I guess they call it Alzheimer's disease or whatever they call it. I remember reading, for example, Frank, hearing that former President Reagan, in the last 2 or 3 years of his life, didn't even know he had been president of the United States. Couldn't explain it. Couldn't remember that. So here you have one of the most popular human beings of the 20th century, in the last 2 or 3 years of his life, didn't even know that. Couldn't remember that. Mm-hmm. He had lost. So that is painful. I know one thing, Frank, that I hope I always have my memory, because my memory is what gives me the ability to remember all these baseball statistics that I've grown up all my life loving. You know, my brother always jokes with me about that, about baseball statistics, but I hope that I never lose my memory so that I can remember all those things about, you know, baseball. And I'm being facetious a little bit, of course, but there's other things that are more important to remember. But for me, that was always the benefit of having a good memory, of saying, yes, I remember that player. I saw him play one day, you know, stuff like that. That really means a lot to me and to everybody else. But your mentioning of spirituality is extremely important, too, because you just gave a speech about a bunch of young men who were killed fighting for something. You know, I'm sure that they were fighting for something greater than them. So, you know, they were willing to die for something. You know, for whatever it was, but they were willing to die for it, and that's a tremendous thing. Well, Frank, as always, your Thanksgiving contribution is always worthwhile and a lot of fun, and it always makes my day when we do this. What any specific plan that you have this year? Are you getting together with family? I assume.
Yes, the family will be over. This is the one day of the year when they come to our house, and they come up from Chicago and from southern Wisconsin, and we all have dinner We're just there for a while, and that's very important.
Well, this year, our Thanksgiving, we'll have a very special new member of the family, and that's a granddaughter that we're going to – we've already met her, but we're going to spend more time with her this weekend, this week. So we're looking forward to that, saying happy Thanksgiving to a little girl who was born on July the 1st. So think about – you know, she was born. Think of what world lies ahead of her. You know, she'll be 78 by the end of the century. So imagine all the things that this little girl is going to see in this amazing century. Happy Thanksgiving, Frank. My best to you and to your family.
And
we'll,
to you as well.
We'll let's start planning for the Christmas conversation.
Yes, and to all our listeners, happy Thanksgiving and God bless.
Thank you very much, Frank. Wonderful as always. Have a wonderful day, and don't get too cold up there.
No.
All right.
The cold is good.
That's right. Thank you very much. Our good friend, Frank Burke, contributor. Actually, we met, as I've said the story before, we met because of an article that he wrote for the American Thinker, and that was 11 years ago. And then we had the opportunity to actually meet them in person last October. And that was a real thrill for me to meet Frank. So, and his wife, and go up in Wisconsin and remember some of the places I used to remember up there. Thank you for listening. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Cato in Dallas.